swallowing Dramamine. Feeling bad, breathing out Listerine. I said what I said, then I tell ya that you kill the better part of me. You could just milk it for everything. I still can't focus on anything. We kiss on the mouth, but still cough down our sleeves.
Do it. You said you want to do the intro. Let's see what you got. That's how an intro goes. Do it.
All right, folks. Welcome to
You're the not Muscle Harry Carey, Jay. Not no. All right, folks. Welcome to. That's how it's done. Try it now.
All right, folks. Like that?
Welcome to.
Welcome to
the Muskie 360 podcast, a Steve Bird.
Steve Bird.
Try it now. See what you get.
All right, folks. Welcome to
the Muskie. That was like you're announcing a little league game. Give it. Okay. You got it. People listen to this because we got spirit, Jay, and we got panache.
All right, folks.
Welcome to. It's your time to shine, Jay. 3, 2, 1.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast, a Steve-O.
Yeah, Jay.
That was pretty good.
That's pretty good, man. Pretty good. All right, this time for real, and we'll go straight into it. Ready? Go.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast, Steve.
Anyway, goodness gracious. All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast, Jay Bird. How hey, is Steve, your this, sucker yeah. sucking?
I thought we were on the sand cat kick, but now we're on the live bait already.
Sucky, sucky.
It's barely mid-October.
All right. Now, here's the real intro. Your turn, Jay. Do the intro. I'll play along. Go for it.
All right, folks. Welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast, a Steve.
You got to ask me a question. We do it every week. One last time. No, that was sucked. Do the intro right. Go.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. Hey, Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Jay. How are you? So anyway.
Not too bad.
Yeah. Are we going to use that? I think we should. That was ridiculous.
It was really bad.
That was really bad. Sorry, folks. No edits here. Live. Pepsification.
Anyway. Live from northern Wisconsin.
Live. Jay, you know what I've been doing all day?
Fishing,
and I came home, and guess what I'm doing? Smoking darts and drinking Pepsi. So I'm talking about fishing. Back on the wagon, folks. Yep. For all the creakers, anyway. Jay, big controversy in the muskie industry. Are you ready?
Is there? Okay.
The 2023 Muskie Shop calendar is available.
That's right. That's it. Just came out. Ink still wet.
Get it.
Looking good. Original artwork on every
Look
month.
At that. Jay drew it all.
Mm-hmm.
Jay,
I'm pretty good.
I bought Jay some colored pencils for Christmas, and you'll be blown away by what he does.
Yep.
No, it's good stuff, man. I love the calendar. It's a great way to just hang it in the shop. I don't know. I just love that thing.
Mm-hmm.
So Jay ruined Christmas last year. You know,
remind me. Uh-huh. I have no idea what you're talking about.
So the new calendar came out. He sent it to the house, and every year for as long as the Muskie Shop has existed, Jody has bought me a Muskie Shop calendar for Christmas.
Oh, so you're saying you got two of them last year?
I got two,
and
I used Jay's.
There you go.
You know, trouble in paradise. Anyway, goodness gracious. Now, that just came out. Dudes, I'm telling you, I'm super excited, super stoked, bruh, about how many people signed up for the Titan Junior. Holy crap.
Yep. Yeah, the listing's on the website now.
If you've not signed up for it, get signed up. That thing's going to be dynamite, JJ.
Mm-hmm.
Very excited.
I think Greg was the first one to sign up, I remember correctly.
Thanks, Greg.
Yeah.
Gregory.
Oh, you know what? Another shout out to Joel, a young muskie angler that it was thanking the both of us up and down for mm-hmm. enriching his musky life. No. So cool kid. He's from Indiana. So I'm just giving him a shout out.
Very cool. Now we got that going on. So you got the the mini Titan Junior coming out. What? There's some other stuff we'll cover. What we're gonna do this week? To be honest with you, I'll get there in a second. But Jay, I was looking at the Q&A and all that stuff we could do this week. There were two questions we got that we're going to do some serious breakdown on. I had to start this week with some bluegrass because last week people said the episode was too heavy, Jay. Too much, too metal for them. What do you think?
Oh, the Muskies hit the floor segment?
Well, yeah, just the Muskie breakdown. It's just most, sure. Like, people can't handle it.
Okay.
Rumor has it, allegedly. Everybody in the Muskie business's favorite word is allegedly. Allegedly. A guy was on his way to work in Indianapolis. His head exploded from the Muskie breakdown. So we're going to do a couple big Muskie breakdown here in a second. But yep. I at least want to touch some of this stuff that showed up. Very excited. The Abu Garcia Max 4, right?
Yeah.
Finally, sub 200 reel, right?
Yeah, finally, right. Sub $200.
After we went through the certain public health crisis, everything got really expensive. But Abu came out with a reel that is musky friendly for $179. So if you're on the fence and you need a reel, it's a good reel. I mean, we've been checking them out. Jay, you had one in your hand the other day. You said it was rock solid.
Seems okay. Make it right and left hand and in the 60 size. So it's an actual musky reel. It's not an oversized bass reel by any means. So, yeah,
that's looking cool. Good. I mean, you got to have an option. You know, there's got to be an option out there that's not crazy expensive and kind of budget friendly. Was it 29 and three quarters per turn or something? 29. It's a 5.3:1, 29 inch line per turn. Looking at it, very, very cool. I mean,
an all-purpose thing.
I mean, dude, a lot of times we'll get a question here, and it's like, "What's the best setup for a beginner?" And you're like, "Oh, it's only $600." You know, I mean, there for a minute, all we had were what, beasts? You know, during the height of the certain incident when supply chains were a mess.
Tranks,
Tranks
were off the market for a long time, about a year.
You know, so
there was a lot of good Daiwa options, though, too.
Jay's favorite reel from Daiwa is the Rhea. Me dumb. Anyway, what else came out new this week? So we have
the 2023 stuff starting to roll in. Little St. Croix.
We got the St. Croix Legend Tournament Split Grip models. Let's just look at these. So this is the built-in pistol grip musky rod, right? Now the podcast is the podcast and it is not systemic of anything else. I don't know what I think, Jay. What do you think? Where are you at on these things?
I'm a little on the fence.
Me too.
I have used jig rippers before.
Mm-hmm.
The nice part about a jig ripper is that if you don't want to use it, you can take it off.
Right.
Or you can adjust it.
Right.
You could flip it to the side. You could flip it down a little bit, you know, another 45 different degrees angles, or whatever. Absolutely. This thing is fixed. It is small. I had the pleasure of popping a Tranks 400 on there Friday. I think they came in Friday, just a few days ago. And the big guy, Elmer, was working. We both tried it and one other employee. And we all kind of had different opinions on it. Elmer's in love with it. He loves that aid and that it takes stress off your arm. Casting and retrieving. So for retrieving certain baits, it is going to be nice. Now, am I going to use that as an all-purpose platform? Probably not. I like my shield rods.
Mm-hmm.
I like long foregrip. These really don't have foregrips.
I mean, that's my thing.
It's a different feel. It's a different feel. And like a buddy of Elmer's texted him because he had contacted him. Hey, they just came in. And he's like, I tried it. I fished with it. And it does not take long to get used to. That was his opinion. So, right. And there are varied opinions on this stuff. So that's my take anyway. What do you think? I mean, just looking at it, what do you think, Steve?
Here's the deal. On the podcast, we give our opinion. We shoot from the hip, right?
Yep.
I've admitted I've been wrong before, right? When the podcast started, it was 8-6 or bust. Literally. Right?
Now, what do you mean?
Rod length. Podcast started.
Three years ago. Sure. Yeah. I mean, it was, exactly.
And so opinions change. My knee-jerk reaction, I didn't like it. I was just like taken aback. Now, I have a shield rod. I've got a 9.6 shield rod that's an X heavy, like the double X, not or extra heavy, but XX heavy with a jig ripper on it. It's on the fork grip, and I dig that, but I'm trying to make my mind up about the trigger under there, under the reel seat, which, again, I'm not saying this is good or bad. I'm highly curious, right? So this is not a commentary on this is bad, this is good. It's a commentary on it's different, you know, and sometimes change is weird. You know, it's one of these things of either everyone will look at this rod and go, that was a really bad idea. Or in the next 2 years, every rod will have that right under the reel.
Yeah, right. But looking at it and actually using it are two different things completely. Right. Looking at it, a lot of people are going, judging from the Facebook post I put up, Friday about this thing, whirlwind of Facebook.
If you see it on Facebook, on there. It's real. I'm on Facebook and Sasquatch.
Can't wait to get home and make a Facebook comment.
I can't wait to get home and get on that Facebook and just tell them people I don't do no the government lies.
Let me tell you though, they've got some fancy names on these new Legend tournament. And let's let the folks know too. Muskie series, that's kind of their flagship.
And please, for the love of God, like I said, I allow us the latitude of my opinion on this. Is not based. I've not held one of these. Have not thrown it. It's just that shock. Whoa, right? That's what's going on. My favorite 9 foot 94-inch beef stick.
They do make a beef stick.
Beef stick. 90 coming in at 90 inches. The Tooth Fairy. 94 inches. We got Slingshot. Blue Ox. I don't know, man.
What is a Blue Ox?
Hey,
it's a Minnesota thing for sure.
Blue Ox. What is it?
Babe? Babe. 9 foot
extra heavy fast. I like them when they're 9 foot extra heavy and fast. Jay loves them. Jay, do you like them extra heavy or extra, extra heavy? And fast.
I don't know, Steve. I'd have to think about it.
Think about it. Guys, like I said, it's either this is truly one of these things. And I don't purport to be a rod expert, right? My favorite rod ever is the shield rod. Been throwing it, beating the crap out of it, love it. St. Croix's always made a great product. It's going to be interesting to see how this is adopted in the industry.
Well, unfortunately, you know, if you think about it, too, it came out at the end of the season here. This week marks around where I live. A lot of people are going to start putting their boats away soon. Right. There's some hardcore guys that don't care. They love to break ice, and that's great. More power to you. But the bulk of people are done fishing. So we're talking a long stretch before people can actually apply this thing and check it out and see if, you know, borrow a buddy's or something, you know.
Well, or come in the shop and try it in your hand.
could do that.
I mean, I'm open. I mean, on the one thing we talk concepts, right? You know, small minds talk about people, right? Enlightened minds talk about concepts. Is this a concept? I'm willing to see. You know, because if you had told me years ago, we're going to throw 9.5-foot rods, I said, you're stupid. I'm going to stick with my 6'6" like a normal human being. You know, that's what the way innovation sometimes is shocking.
Mm-hmm.
So is it innovative or is it off the mark? We just need to see. And I mean, it's going to be a matter of what's going on there. So let me put it this way. If you're a podcaster and you end up buying one of these rods, right? I'll send you a free bait. If you, I can look up your order. You say, hey, my name is, and I bought this rod, and you give us an earnest review of it. And let us know. I mean, because I want to, I'm so tactile, I need to have one in my hands and see, because it's either going to be the newest, it's going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread, or it's just not going to fly and it'll be forgettable and nobody will remember it. So the other thing I'll point out,
it's got potential. And let me just point out too, earlier you said that you put your jig ripper on the foregrip. That's right. Well ahead of the reel. This thing extends underneath the reel seat, just towards the back. Mm-hmm. So if you palm the reel, when I tried it, you can get about 3 fingers worth around the reel.
Mm-hmm.
You follow? You know,
yeah, like I see that, what you're saying in some regard.
The pinky is not able to wrap the reel. So
Jay,
take some getting to use to.
I got giant hands though, Jay. Giant. How many fingers do you think? 2?
Yeah, probably.
My favorite thing about this new series is the one rod that has a rapper's name, though. Little Dog.
little Dog.
Little Dog. Anyway, I don't know. Like I said, not negative, not positive. I just want to hear some feedback from somebody that gets this rod and fish. Because like I said, I deal with arm fatigue. I deal with a lot of, whether it be casting. I mean, the one thing I'd say is this, like the add-on jig ripper, right? We sell them at the shop, and you can put on the foregrip or wherever you want on the rod. If I'm on a Bondi bite or a Fuzzy Desert bite, and I'm doing that all the time, it's insanely helpful.
Right.
All I worry about is if I look at a hook set for me is less bicep and more side turn. So is it going to change the physical dynamics of my hook set if I'm using that grip, or it will be helpful because I have more power? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's ballsy, mm-hmm. dude. That's mm-hmm. the one thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, St. Croix has taken, to their credit, there were no musky rods on the market worth anything, to St. Croix came along and created the musky market as we know it, period. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
As far as rods. And they innovated, and people went, nobody wants, you know, a rod that big. I remember when 8.6s came out, Jay?
Mm-hmm.
St. Croix was the first, correct?
In a true musky rod? Probably. Yeah.
And everyone, I think you're right. Oh, no, I'm sticking with my 6.6. What's the one I got up here? Berkeley Signal Flex, Jay.
Whoa. There was a lot of people pushing back at that whole 8.6 thing when that started to, you know, kick in 20 years ago or whatever it was.
Well, it's just really the perspective of don't make a snap judgment, negative or positive. You just got to see what it does.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, same thing with double tens. Double tens came out. I mean, there was a huge amount of resistance. You know, is this a joke or what?
And I mean, I'm not, me and you have had private conversations about this rod before this came out, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not shilling for it or advocating for it. I think the best way to view anything new is just from a neutral perspective. Right? What's that going to do? Is it going to provide me with something that I've needed and I didn't know I needed? Or is it going to provide me with ergonomics or hook setting power? I don't know. That's going to be interesting. I just think the thing that maybe got me or caught me off guard the most is the bassy lack of a foregrip. Right?
Yep.
Because if I'm a crankbaiter, I'm throwing jerkbaits, I'm throwing a titan, I'm throwing a slammer, I think a lot of guys sort of ride the foregrip.
Well, I think their intention is to force you to use the pistol grip.
Right.
Bypass the whole foregrip completely. So,
is it ergonomics?
Like Elmer's buddy said, it took a little getting used to, but it really didn't take long. He's like 10 minutes into casting it. Yeah. Moving from all my reels always had paddle handles, obviously.
Right.
Power handles became popular. And it's like, I don't know. I kind of wasn't in favor of trying something like that for a long time. And I think last year I bought my first reel that had a power handle. And it's like, you know how long that took to get used to it? Probably like 5 casts.
Well, the thing is, me and you, I think responding, we saw a lot of people that were like knee-jerk negative about it. And it's one of these things of innovation is often shocking. Is it innovative? Maybe they are innovative. Maybe somebody else that has done this is innovative. It's just a question of, is it going to stick? You know, is it going to be the thing where you go, You know, I know some guys that all they do is rip bulldogs or tubes and all they fish is a jig gripper. So, you know, it's about placement. It's about balance. I don't know. Like I said, I don't think, Jay, I don't think you have an answer. I don't think I have an answer per se.
I don't at all. I haven't fished with it. Yeah, I played around with it. Time's going to tell on this thing. It's going to be next neutral. Year. It really will.
Right. Yeah. If it resonates with you and you go, this seems like, and the thing I'd say is this, like the St. Croix Market or some of these guys with these rods, I don't know if this is a rod for the younger generation or if it's a matter of ergonomics for anglers that are on the older side.
Yeah, good point.
Right? So, I mean, you guys have seen me in the videos, Musky Shop TV, wearing a wristband. I don't wear that because I think I'm going to dunk a basketball like LeBron James. It's because my wrist is inflamed every day because I fish all day every day.
And it lowers your cholesterol.
And it lowers my A1C. but, you know, it's one of those things of Musky Risk is the most amazing product of all time by Tim. But I'm not here to shill products, but quick segue, Musky Risk, now on sale at the Musky Shop. But, you know, it might be ergonomics. It might be just killer for certain people. You know, Jay, let me ask you this. On the green rods, the Legend Tournament Elites, are they keeping the same series they had on that, and this is just on the blue rods? What's the thought there?
Yes, that's unchanged. I mean, there's a slight, maybe a slight price increase across the board on their existing stuff. But yeah, the Legend Elite's the same. The Premier line, the original line, I think every model is the same, and they're still doing the Mojos too.
Great rod.
You know, like the black one, you know, kind of like purple etching on it and stuff. That's a great series.
I'll tell you. Well, get you a shield rod. Steve Paul's a shield rod man. I'm a shield rod man. What do you think, Jay?
Me too. Absolutely. But I've got a heck of a lot of St. Croix too.
Well, check them out. I would love, like I said, we'll give a free bait or something or some swag to the first guy that's a podcaster. I would love an honest review on it. Don't buy one and get it in the mail and say I don't like it. Buy one and fish with it. Right? We can look up if you bought one for the Musky Shop. Let us know. I really want to know because, like I said, innovation is shocking. You know, the first time people heard rock and roll, they said it's the devil's music. So, you know, maybe this is it. We don't know. We don't know at all, Jay. Anyway, Jay, moving on from our prattling about, it's time for the first of the Musky Breakdowns.
Breakdown.
Matt says, another day, another skunk. Any chance of doing a Fishing in High Winds podcast? Every day I seem to go out, I've got to deal with rough water, and my smooth brain is in pain, trying to figure out what to do. Smooth brain. Anyway, Jay.
Yeah. High
big,
wind.
Big wind.
Tis the season. Yeah.
It's a blowing. That's what it sounds like. What does it sound like to you, Jay?
Well, you can't hear the wind. You can hear the result of the wind, Steve. So
Tay in
there
the
you
wind.
Have it.
Anyway, mm-hmm. So Matt, wind is interesting in the fact that it wreaks havoc on our boat control. We all know that, mm-hmm. right? So boat mm-hmm. control is an issue. So we're going to talk about boat control and playing the wind. So I would say in general, wind is going to move bait fish if it's sustained, right? So what we want to do is we want to pay attention to the wind leading up to the day we're going to fish. So let's say we get to fish on Sunday, or we're going to fish Tuesday when we're off. Look at the days leading up before you fish, right? So if you're fishing on Thursday, watch the weather leading up to that. Is there a cold front beforehand? What's going on there? But wind direction. So shifting winds. If I've had a sustained wind, let's say it's blowing from the east for 2 days, that's going to shift all the bait fish, right? It's going to move microbes. It's going to move everything to that western shore if it's blowing out of the east and vice versa. So mm-hmm. we want to look at our patterning in that regard of, okay, what have they been on? Have muskies been on steep breaks, right, Jay? Let's say they're on, and that's a very fallish thing right now. They're on steep breaks. Well, if the wind's been blowing, you know, from the east, we want to look on that other shoreline, right? We don't want to fish into the wind per se. I preferably want the wind blowing me into the bank, not off of the bank. So as a general rule of thumb, If you're fighting the wind to stay on something, like if I'm facing nose into the shore and the wind's trying to blow me off of it, that's a bad thing because it's blowing microbes, which are moving, you know, all the different things and minnows and blah, 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 the whole food chain. I want to be on the windward side of things. I want to be where the wind's crashing in, right? Now, with that being said, the wind can be so, so vicious that it's making massive rollers, right? So if it's a Minnesota thing where you got 3-4 footers, that might be a little bit tough. But inland waterways, some of the different bodies of water, look at it in that regard. If the wind's beating into said shore, that's the shore I want to be looking at. Don't fight the wind to get to the spot. Let the wind blow you into the spot. But it's really a boat control thing because, I mean, I really think sustained winds are going to move the whole food chain, like I said. Is how do we contend with that, right? How do we fish a spot effectively when the wind's blowing heavily? 30, 40, you know, sustained 20s can be tough for anybody. And if you only got one day or 2 days to fish, you're going to have to consider that. So, two mechanisms to utilize. Spot lock. Or an anchor, right? Very, very simple. Poor man's spot lock is a cinder block on a rope, right? If you got a couple more bucks, a real anchor, or you have spot lock on your boat. What you're going to need to do is face the nose of your boat into the wind and play it in that regard. Jay, what would you say, like, especially on the Wisconsin lakes? I mean, you're seeing that forage movement, the staging of things moving. In the wind, right?
Absolutely.
Well, elaborate, sir.
Well, I think you're right. You know, if you point your boat into the wind and you can use something to slow your approach, it depends on how large a section you want to fish. But let's say it's a complex that's a square couple hundred yard deal. That's perfect. You have a slower approach. You're not getting pounded because the front of the boat's boat. You get sideswiped in that stuff. You know, you try to do like a drift that way into it. It's going to be an absolute nightmare when you're talking huge rollers. So that's the way to do it. Go in there, fish as effectively as you can. Pull your, if you're using just the trolling motor, let's say you got an anchor up, pull it up, do this, you know, go another 150 yards back up into the wind and do it again. Mm-hmm. Do it repeatedly until you think you're covering that water, because you're probably still going to be moving 3 miles an hour or something way faster than, you know, mm-hmm. than you want to be. But again, I mean, you're more experienced with that when it comes to high wind situation. It's like if you got your trolling motor, a good trolling motor, and a decent enough boat that you can handle 4 foot waves, it's like it can be done. And but I guess my question would be, can you slow your approach and your span of that area to less than 2 miles an hour drift speed? Is that possible
with the sock?
Yeah, that's a pain in the butt to deploy.
I have one in my boat. I have a drift sock in my boat, and it is rare I break it out, but I've caught fish using it. Right, so you can get a drift sock from a lot of different places, but you got to realize that the water speed is not the wind speed, so you can slow things down with a drift sock. I mean, man, it's got to be gnarly before I break that out with spot lock anymore, right? But the way I'm controlling my boat is nose in, spot lock with the trolling motor off the front, fish off the back, and blast into spots, right? You know, I think the biggest thing to look at is with the big rowers like that, you know, 2, 3, whatever it might be in plus.
Yeah.
Is presentation.
That's the thing. You want a slower presentation right now.
Right. And so if we're throwing, let's say we're throwing into the wind, it's blowing the bait at you. If you've got your nose into the wind and you're throwing with the wind, it's going to bring things up. In big, heavy rower situation, I think rubber is about the only thing you can really be effective with. You know, I'm not talking shallow dog, but think about it. If you're spot locked nose into the wind, right? And you're in the back of the boat, you're stationary. Yeah, if you're going to try to slow roll blades, they're going to roll really high. They're going to run really high. You're not going to use a Titan. You're not going to use topwater. You're not going to use a glide bait. You are relegated to tubes and dogs, alien eels, you know, toothy tufts,
Medusas. Well, another thing, you know, it's like if you had 9-inch grandmas in your boat, very castable. Basically look at it as a jerk bait, you know, it's just like give it short rips and it's like let that thing hang. And although, you know, your line is it would be impossible to get a straight retrieve on that. The thing's always gonna be arcing and coming in at a strange angle because you're moving probably faster than you want to be. And again, you'd have to look at your locator to really know the speed, because you have no idea the sense of speed. You think you're probably moving faster than you are just because of the waves.
Right.
But well, yeah, let's say you get it down to two. It's just like, I think a jerkbait like that, because that thing just...
If you're drifting in, though. If you're not stationary, you're going to have to contend with the speed of the wind and the presentation.
Yeah.
You know, so it's how you skin the cat. I mean, if you get nose in, you drift in, okay, you have a little bit more control and you get things down, but... You can't saturation cast. You can't really cover area when you're drifting in at speed. You know, to me, it's like spot lock, hit a radius, spot lock, hit a radius, spot lock, hit a radius. Seems to make the most sense. Now, again, spot lock can be an anchor. That's sort of a lost art. There's not a lot of guys that have an anchor in your boat, but man, you get in a big blow. We did that Minnesota thing last year, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
Big blow. Spot lock saved her life.
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely.
Big chop, big waves. So you need to be strategic in a couple elements. So let's talk about like spot selection, and we sort of glanced over or just sort of riffed on it for a second. You have the sheltered area and you have the wind blown. That is it. Right. So you've got the area of the wind where the wind is entering the body of water. Let's say you have timber, trees, whatever, something to block the wind. You will have a sheltered area where the wind is hitting. Right. That is feasible. And the wind blown side or wind blown structure becomes your most, you know, impactful zones. So what we want to look for is the slack area. So let's say the wind is coming from the east, the eastern side of the lake, there might be far less wave action, far less wind on the eastern side, and the western side's getting pounded with the waves, right? Those are your two zones. Now, generally, if it's been sustained, the western side's going to be what matters, right? So if it's winds coming from the east, which means it's blowing towards the west, it's coming from the east, blowing towards the west.
For 2 days.
For 2 days, or mm-hmm. longer than a day,
mm-hmm.
everything's going to be jamming over there, right? Now, the problem we run into, I think more so than anything, is I mean, there's a seasonal aspect to this in some regard, right? Let's say that it's this time of year, which he's referring to, which we know that fish are on breaks, right? Not too many places are up nitty-gritty shallow. You might get on the shallow side, on that littoral shelf, and spotlock into the wind and throw out to the deep and work the baits in that way, right? Because the muskies are going to stage into the wind. If it's rolling, there's subcurrent, there's things going on, they're pushing food, they're pushing bait. So it might feel more natural, and it might make more sense to throw into the wind and retrieve with the wind, right? So if it's blowing right in your face and it's going to be miserable all day long, but that's the area the muskies are expecting the bait to come from. They're expecting them to come from the main basin or up the break lines, headed toward the shallows, and you might contact some fish there. The other thing to be said there, if it is blowing so bad that boat control is gnarly, trolling becomes a serious option. Right? You got to sort of look at what kind of baits I'm running. Am I going to run grandmas and jakes and stuff that's going to get rocked around? No. But if it's really blowing, headlocks and reef diggers become serious for me. Right? So if you just can't handle the boat control and you're sick of it. But really, I think the matter of boat control it pales in comparison to the patterning event, though. You know, if it just started blowing that way today, it's up in there. Like you said, if it's sustained for a couple of days, then you need to shift to that side. What else sort of coming to mind for you, Joe?
Safety.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big deal. That's a big deal. The water's getting cold and, you know, it's mm-hmm. in the 40s. It's like you slip and go in. That's not good.
Right.
So that's another thing. It's like if it's blowing that hard and, you know, we've got weather right now where, you know, the deck could be freezing up too when that spray's hitting it. So
right.
Be safe.
Be safe. I don't know. Safety's for losers, Jay. He said, I don't know. I mean, I'll tell you flat out, and I'm just being serious. Once we hit that 50s stuff, I have a survival suit that I wear that's like a windproof winter suit. If you guys are late year warriors and you guys are going to be out there soaking meat and stuff, dude, you getting 55 degree water or down, shock is coming.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't talk about morbidity too often. But consider that an auto inflate life vest or a survival suit for real. Cause that is, you're right. I mean, like I said, when it's blowing that bad and the boat's rocking and tipping, you're like a little cork in the ocean. That's something to consider.
And if you're determined to fish that choppy side where the wind's coming in, it's just like, like you said, just a second ago, maybe, try trolling first, trolling past.
Fish out of the gunnel is another thing that I've done. Me and you have done that together, Jay. Get down the gunnel of the boat and throw from there because you're up top and you're just whipping around like a freaking rag doll.
Yeah.
And you're looking at each other going, should we go in? This is real dumb.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as presentation, let's get to the meat and taters. Mm-hmm. As far taters. As presentation, though, like I said, to be highly effective, you know, bogs, mohawks, water wolf, medusas, bulldogs, something that's going to be pretty productive in as far as like, I should say, it wouldn't be more productive, but it would be more presentable. You know, you don't want blades breaking through these waves, because a lot of times that big wind is indicative of a bad front coming, you know, the backside, a cold front's coming or something of that nature. So I still want some depth out of my presentation at that point, especially when they're getting this late year. I mean, another caveat, and we got a different question this week about how do we soak suckers in wind like that? Mm-hmm. That's, I don't even know. Put a pound weight on him. You know, there's a question for Minnesota this week of going, how do I deal with suckers and three footers? You better put an 8 ounce weight or whatever you got, you know, a freaking car battery to weight that thing down, because it's sort of pointless if he's drifting up towards the surface.
Yeah, I mean, if you're dragging that thing at high speed, it's not going to be presentable. That's not going to work at all.
He's skiing across the top like a squirrel or something. You know, you're just killing a sucker. So,
what kind of squirrel?
Gray.
A gray squirrel. Okay.
That's the only kind that can ski, Jay. You idiot. Everybody knows that.
Good one.
Working with freaking amateurs.
Yeah. Ridiculous. True.
Jay.
Steve.
What is the first person that sends a skiing squirrel meme to the Musky Shop? info@themuskyshop.com win.
Coffee mug.
There you go, folks. Being serious. Sorry, Jay. But, you know, I mean, I'm just thinking out loud on the wind thing. Because big, like, serious wind days are tough. Now, the one thing I can tell you is a lot of times in the evening, you're going to get your evening decoupling of the wind. There's a certain point where the different layers of air will separate and the wind will lay down, quote unquote, lay down. So it might slacken off. You know, yeah. And I think we're both thinking like Minnesota rocking and rolling. We're thinking big win. Man, just rubber, super, super heavy spinner baits. If you got them 3-4 ounces, like you said, Jay, jerk baits can be effective. Something I've done before is take like a minnow bait, like a slammer or a grandma, and do them as like a Carolina rig and put like 1 ounce or 2 ounces in front of that thing to keep it down. We are essentially ripping the sinker, but you know, the bait's behind it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're fighting that serious wave action, because I mean, you know, the weird thing trolling is you're up and down. So the baits are undulating. So focus on your baits that have a sink rate to them, so you can sort of control that zone. I know muskies will be up below the waves, but they're not going to be up in the cresting crap. You know what I'm saying? You need to be, right, if it's a 4-footer, you need to be down below that, if you see what I'm saying conceptually. Mm-hmm. So adding weight to crankbaits, adding weight to dive and rise, ripping the crap out of stuff. But the one thing I'll say in wind, and I'm thinking out loud here, is hang time still works, though. I've seen that a lot where they're anticipating wounded or discombobulated bait fish. So I don't want to be working it fast. I want to be presenting them something that has some hang time or a fall to it. Seems a little bit natural in that regard.
Yeah.
Let's think, Jay, as far as like big crashing, nasty waves, wind, we're dealing with the worst of the worst of the worst. As far as the trolling option, I said a reef dicker and a headlock. What's some other stuff you think, like depth raider, Cisco Kid? You know, we're on the deeper side of things. What's some big action trolling baits you can think of off the top of your head?
Yeah, Cisco Kid 1800s, depth raiders, suspending depth raiders, grandmas, 9-inch grandmas, huge in the fall.
Huge in the fall, but if we're in big wind, more line. You know, because those seem to run a little bit high. You know, if the boats bounce them up and down. But, you know, and, I mean, again, we've talked about it. And at a certain point, we need to put a kit together. Is me and you both will run a bunch of rubber core sinkers during the fall on stuff just to keep it where we want it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you might want to do 1 ounce or 1/2 ounce or 3/4 ounce rubber core if you're trolling a grandma in big wind to really make sure your running depth's where you want it. You know, what else? I mean, again, not to back to beat rubber to death, but you can troll rubber. I made that work in Big Wind before. Dozer blades on rubber. Or just the other thing is this is just jerk baiting big rubber, you know, at slow speeds. And I think that would be like if we came down to, hold on, setting up here. Gonna adjust the microphone. Jay, if it came down to the ultimate worst case scenario, right?
Okay.
And I'm thinking out loud here. Me and you are on the lake and it is blowing immortal hell, right? It will not stop blowing and boat control is nothing and things are bad. I honestly think trolling with like mag bulldogs and ripping them while we drive would be my ultimate last case scenario. Right? Rip it forward, let it go back, rip it forward, let it go back. And that can be effective. I've done that before in the worst of the worst of the worst. Where essentially you've got that thing down at depth. You're not casting it. You're going 2 miles an hour or whatever it is, whatever you got to do to fight that wind, and you're ripping that bulldog like you're casting it, but you're just in a trolling mode. You know, after that, I'm out of ideas, but I've done
it. Well, the shallow versions of plastics, too, this time of the year are well, just absolutely deadly. So.
They are, but, you know, again, we get in that big wind, though, dude. You know, yeah, if
you're trolling, you got slack line, you know, and it's just like, you know, you can present that thing at 6 feet all day long.
Right.
It's just perfect.
Right. And you're not going to fight as much where, you know, my brain, like I said, I would probably go with a mag dog, you know, maybe even a pounder, extra heavy shield rod and freaking the boat's in gear and I'm doing 2 miles an hour and I advance at 4 feet and let it drop back, advance, let it go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That
yeah.
can be deadly. I mean, it's not yeah. conventional, but it is effective. You know, I mean, you're fight. If we're talking fighting gnarly stuff, you got to think out of the box. Again, the same thing could be said for a flipper or a Titan, though, too, or a Suic. A weighted Titan, a weighted Suic. You know, you put 80 feet of line out there, that sucker's running, dude. That's running deep, and you can rip them. So trolling and ripping is I'm just thinking out loud of options. Big win. So
yeah, keep the weights in the Titans. Keep the weights in the Suic. That thing's got right. a really slow rise to it. It's exactly what you want.
Right. So you could rip troll a bulldog. You could rip troll a Titan. You could rip troll a swimming dog or a Poseidon as well.
Yeah.
In those scenarios. Which is not something you see people doing often. I mean, we Jay, you've been with me, and we've gotten eats on that rip trolling. You know, mm-hmm. I do that in the winter quite a bit. So, you know, if it comes down to it, and we want to catch a fish, I mean, we've been working through this problem out loud. I mean, rip trolling is unconventional, but it works. You could do tubes. So bulldogs, tubes, medusas, diving rise baits, very buoyant crank baits you can rip troll. You know, you rip it forward a little bit and let it float up a little bit, much like a diving rod. So, big win, that's a scenario that can play there.
Yeah. My 1-2 punch would be a dive-rise jerkbait, you know, a Suic uh-huh. or a Titan, weighted, or something with a tail. You know, some type of plastic with tail.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, anyway.
The Bulldog Medusa thing, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, moving on, we have the jigging breakdown. Steve, my main squeeze. Aw, I love you too. Could you please do a jigging masterclass? I want to know more about it. When, where, why, and how. You guys are the best. P.S. Hi, Jay.
Hi.
I'm his main squeeze. You're just an addendum at the end, Jay.
Todd.
What do you have to do to be in Todd's good graces? Todd.
I don't know. Sounds like it might be the Rod Father, Todd.
Todd, the Rod Father Kukulinski. Todd. I love people named Todd.
Oh, who doesn't?
Todd. hot toddy. Anyway, jigging. Musky breakdown. Breakdown. Anyway, so we have what most people think to be limited options in jigging. When you think musky jigging, you think about Bondi baits. And you might think about fuzzy dozens, right? Mm-hmm. First thing that comes to mind to me is there are other options.
Yep.
You don't say. Really?
You bet there is. Absolutely.
Tons of options. So let's get through the options in jigging of what we have at our disposal for this tactic, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have a bulldog that you have lost the tail off of, that is now a jigging bait, right?
And yeah, I suppose.
Well, and I've jigged bulldogs with tails, but I save somewhere like they're just gnarled up, right? And I'll put a blade on the back, right? Use one of these little hitch things or melt it on there, some kind of contraption, or just straight bulldog, right? So you got bulldogs, you have tubes, okay? You have swim baits, you have fuzzy dozens, you have bondies. The other thing are these big grubs. Okay. So you have the Bondi and the Bondi Mini, which is sort of your standard jig size. But you can do a Kalins on literally like a 1 ounce jig head. I think, Jay, in the parts department, we have some very heavy jig, just the jig heads, like a almost like a walleye. Yep. Ask, right.
Yep. Bunch of Kalins weights. Yeah.
Right. And so you've got other options there. So,
you know, another good one is the Bait Rigs Esox Magnum jig.
There you go.
Skirted jig ready to go with a soft trim mm-hmm. on the back. Those things are good.
And so you've got more than just quote unquote musky jigging, and it's Bondi. That's not the only game in town. So he asked when, where, why, how. Let's talk about when. Year round. Muskies adhere to the rules we've talked about on Structure Podcast. Their home is deep water. They come in shallow to feed and to warm up, right? You can jig muskies from opener to close 365.
Sure.
There is always a muskie on the bottom. Always. I don't care what's going on. There are always bottom type muskies. So when to do it? Anytime you feel like it. Now, why? Why do I do it, personally? If I'm having absolute zero return shallow, okay? So let's talk about climactic things. Cold fronts, jigging is something I'm going to be looking at. Winter time, jigging, I'm looking at. Fall transition, I'm looking at it. So mm-hmm. the majority of the time, spring and summer, it's an afterthought. The majority of the year, jigging is a serious proposition. Okay. So if we got bad conditions, we've got, you know, a lot of guys are dealing with, Jay, in the reality of the podcast and most people that are listening, they got Saturday and Sunday, or they got Saturday, or they got one trip a year, or they got two trips a year, whatever it is. When you feel like nothing else is working, when you're just sitting there going, man, I want to give up, that is the time to jig. Things are bad. You know, the weed bed you love is not giving up fish. You know, high bright sun, dead flat, calm, nasty stuff. Get in there and jig. So preferably the things I like to jig, I do like Bondi baits. I'm a big fuzzy dozens fan, though. If you look at walleye jigs, some of these bladed walleye jigs are some of the top producers of the walleye airplane jig. There's something kind of magical about that. And you go, well, why the fuzzy? Okay, so I take the standard fuzzy. I put a blade on it. It's a piece of metal. Get your freaking DeWalt drill or your drill you got from Walmart. Drill a hole in the back. Put a blade on it, right? Now you have the highest hooking percentage jig in the business. Okay? We're not worried about ripping the rubber through their teeth. It's a freaking piece of sheet metal. He hits it. There's nowhere for his teeth to go. He can't.
Yeah, you don't get a thinner body than a fuzzy dozen. Yeah, right. Absolutely.
It's a blade.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, that little number, I think it's a number 6 Colorado on a Bondi, Jay? Something like that? 6, 7?
Yeah, 7-ish. Yeah.
Maybe 6, 7. Split ring, swivel, split ring blade. Easily done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Put that on your fuzzy does it. And we're not worried about that hooking percentage. It's going to get hooked. I can't think of the last time I had a fish hit a fuzzy and I didn't get him. You know, some of these rubber vertical jigs, a little different story. So what I'm looking to do is contact the majority of muskies. So if conditions are poor, think jigging. If it is a cold front, you know, if it's high, bright, sun, dead, flat, calm, if muskies simply have been obstinate for 2 days, whatever.
Yeah, I look at it and break it down in three different things.
One.
In the summer, middle of the day. Fishing will go out there deeper. Yeah. Any other time of the year, falling water temps or the cold water temp period.
You just said, not to cut you off, I'll say to you for you southern guys, falling water. Reservoir fishing, I'll tell you what, it saves my butt. I called you and he said, what are you doing? I got two jigging on a body of water in the middle of our state that was down a billion feet.
Yeah, I saw the picture.
I sent you that picture and you're like,
yeah,
you're telling me that stuff dropped 10 foot drawdown, dude.
Insane.
Guess where they were at? On the bottom. So, sorry, what's point number three, Jay?
I already said them.
Okay, fair enough.
The falling water temps or the cold water period were number two and three.
Well, there you go.
So, you know, like your winter fishing, you know, you can fish all winter. We can't, but yeah, I mean, you resort to that quite often, and, you know, it's a slow tactic and it's painstaking at times, but it's just like that's how you're going to get bit.
Well, I mean, if that's what you got to have there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's your when and why. You know, where. So let's say it is summer. Most of us focus our muskie efforts during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got some historical data. We've been out for a couple days. Muskies were really moving in the weeds, right? They're moving on the edge. And it just dies. And you go, man, we were on them and now we're off of them. Jigging just slightly outside of where you are on them can be deadly during the middle of the day.
Probably because
middle
of the day, because you were out there in the morning, probably fairly early, and it's just so you're kind of on in the shallow. We've been over that before with the whole breakdown of the whole time frame of you know, day to day schedule of the muskies. It's just like by 10 a.m. or earlier, they're usually starting to move out.
Right.
Following everything. Where did they, absolute sense.
Why did the bite die? Where did they go? They moved out to the break. So, you know, if your boat's sitting in 10 and you're throwing in the shallows, maybe move your boat out to 14 and you jig 12 to 14. And you can pick up fish. So if things slower, things have fallen apart, right? Jig right outside of those littoral zones, those weeded zones, those shallow zones, jig that first break, right? So if you haven't listened to the Structure Masterclass, we got a couple of them. Figure out what that means, right? Where's that first break line? Muskies will move out to that and you can jig that, right? When we get into those bad zones, the deeper water, it might be the contact point there. It might be the main basin, depending on your water depth. But breaking away from those zones, because muskies are going to move from the deep water adjacent to shallow zones. That's what they love to do. Okay. And so we're going to not go out. I mean, I've seen people do it. Like, we're going to jig and they go out to the deepest water they can find. 30 feet. No. 12, 15, 10. I've caught a lot of muskies jigging in 7 feet, 8 feet of water. Right. Just the outside break. The weeds are at 6, and we were just right on the outside of that. So don't think you have to be in extremely deep water, 20, 25 feet. Jig outside of the productive zones. You know, and one thing I'd say about how to jig. I see so many people doing this grandiose maneuver, right? They're lifting the rod 4 or 5 feet. Wow, up and down, up and down. The most productive methodology I've found is I raise that thing maybe a foot, foot and a half. and I lower it down under tension. You don't want to rip it up and let it fall. It's up under tension, down under tension, up and down, right? You feel the jig the entire time. You feel the fuzzy does it. You feel the Bondi bait. You know, a tube with a blade in the back, a bulldog just as is, or an augmented bulldog, or a Medusa, they can all be effective jigs, right? But you don't want to just rip this thing where it's moving 5-6 feet in the air. Now, something that is advantageous for me is I have panoptics now, right? And so watching on panoptics, I don't think there's a day of the week I can go out and move a fish on a jig. If I'm bored, I'm sick of casting, or my rotator cuff hurts, or my shoulder hurts, or everything hurts, I jig. And there's very few days that I don't get action on a jig. Now, I might not catch the fish, but they'll come in and look at it. It's highly effective. I truly believe, you know, if you put a gun to my head and said, you have one tactic to catch a muskie today, right? I would probably pick jigging. Just because they're so bottom tight. And with panoptics, I'm seeing so many muskies come off the bottom chasing bucktails, chasing crankbaits, that I think these fish spend far more time than we want to admit bottom tight. Now, it doesn't mean 30 feet down.
Right, right. Good point.
But it means their belly's on the bottom and they're coming up. So,
and you're talking a high percentage of the daylight fishing time, too.
Right.
You know, you take away the first 2 hours and the last hour and a half, what do you got? You got a lot of hours where jigging is going to be more effective. Yeah.
So, it's like what do we talk about trolling all the time? Finding the right depth and holding at it. Well, that's because we want to run it right over their heads. I think muskies are a bottom fish. Hate to say it. Unpopular opinion. But the vast majority of the time, these things are bottom tight. Now, is it 30 feet down or 20 feet down or 10 feet down? I think most of the time it's 15 to zero, but I've got panoptics. I see these things come off the bottom and chase bucktails. They're 6 feet over their head. So jigging is effective just because of proximity. Like I said, don't jig that bait, you know, 40 feet in the air and up and down like a dingus. You know, small movements. It seems to be small movements are the best, right? With that being said, stopping the jig. If you see a fish, you have panoptics, you got side scan, you see a fish, sometimes the best thing to do is just stop that thing dead in its tracks. Hold it stationary and you'll see them smack it. But just allowing the same time to simmer those important, because we look at like, if casting doesn't work, we expect trolling to be an immediate payoff, right? A lot of guys that troll go, well, we trolled for an hour today and didn't get eaten. But you will cast for 15 hours and not get a fish and not question it, right? Jigging is the same in some regard. You know, you don't just start jigging and jig for an hour and catch a fish. You've got to dedicate time to it. But if I genuinely believe there's barely a body of water in the muskie habitat zone, if you went out and you jig from sunup to sundown, something wouldn't happen.
Yeah. And think about how much easier, too, it is to locate fish when they're off the shallow weed areas. You know, your locator is, you know, if you're relying on your locator, you know, going through a 2 to 4 foot weed bed, it's just like, come on, no, you're not using it to mark fish and mark bait fish because you're in weeds. It's just like when you're off them and you're deeper and 10, 12, 13, 14 feet, it's like you have a greater sense of what's going on. And I think it's easier to get dialed in too when it comes to, you know, jigging for them at that point.
Well, and like I said, it's just effective. You're going to contact fish. If you don't have panoptics, don't worry about it. I'd say the one thing you need to look at is making bottom contact, but not sustained bottom contact.
Yeah.
It touches it up, up, down, up, down.
Yeah, and like you said, that 1 to 2 foot thing. Try to keep it 1 to 2. Just don't go crazy. Don't
try. Yeah.
Look at your rod tip. If you're using a long rod, you move that thing up, you know, a certain way. It's just like, oh, man, I just moved that. If you really look at the end of the rod,
yes,
it's really easy to move it 3 feet with just a flick of the wrist. So you gotta really watch that.
It's a small motion. I mean, I think guiding when I'm jigging, that's the biggest thing that we fight. You know, it's just speed and depth control, just like anything else. But if that thing's moving up and down really far, it means it's generally moving fast.
Yeah.
But a foot and a half is all it takes. And every now and again, a stoppage and just suspend it. I've been eaten so many times doing that. Just up and down and up and down with a fuzzy desert, or up and down with a Bondi. And then I pause it for a second. Kerdoosh.
Cool.
So, and the thing I'd say is this. Most of everybody that's musky fishing off a boat has down scan on their trolling motor, right? You can watch your jig on downscan, and you can see muskies come in on downscan, right? You'll see this big up and down thing. It looks like a sine wave, like a big bass frequency of your jig.
That's so cool. All of a sudden it's there. Uh-huh. Where'd he come from?
Yeah, and then you'll see this big old arch come in. And so it's super effective in that regard. Now, you know, it really comes down to how bad do you want to catch a fish, I think, is the why, though. Is it exciting? Is it casting? No. It's literally jigging. It's just like walleye jigging for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. But as a guide, when you know, I've got this pressure on me that we got to catch a fish every day. Every day I have to, the assumption is I have to put a fish in the boat. Does it happen every day? No. But the assumption is that's what's going to happen. So I have to use every tool at my disposal to make that possible. And I look to jigging when I just, in my gut, I go, nothing else is going to click, right? Bait fish are not high in the water column. We've got light penetration. We got post frontal. We got bad weather. We've got anything you can name. The crappier it is, the more I'm focused on jigging. Period. Now, as far as the presentation, like we talked about, bulldogs, and that could be a water wolf, that could be a litany of these different things. You know, a bulldog is a different presentation, but it has just as much impact as a Bondi bait. A regular size bulldog or a mag bulldog is a fantastic jig. You don't have to have a specified jig. They have enough weight that they'll do that, right? One thing I like about bulldogs is jig is the hooking percentage. Most of your big bulldogs, a mag dog has sevens, right? Double sevens. And your standard dog, what, J5s? 5-0s on a standard
bulldog? Right around there, yeah.
So you got a really good hooking percentage there. Like I said, the fuzzy does it, really good hooking percentage. The things I'd focus on technically, though, whether I'm jigging a Medusa, a bulldog, a fuzzy does it, a Bondi, whatever we got, is I'm not going to jig with a medium action rod or a heavy action rod. I'm going to jig with an extra heavy or a double X heavy, right? I have the heaviest shield rod, 9.6, that I can get with a jig ripper on it. And the reason being is because when those fish hit, I need to set that hook devastatingly hard.
Yeah.
Because you got to realize on a cast, you might make an 80-foot cast, 60-foot cast. You got a lot of shock absorption there, and the fish is going to hit it in the angles. When we're jigging in 10 feet of water, guess how far the fish is from me, Jay? 10 feet.
Mm-hmm.
It is the hand of God when they hit these things on the downswing. Like if the bait's falling and they hit it, you can't miss them. But a lot of times if they're coming up, you need that super stiff rod to like catch up to the fish in some regard.
Yeah.
You don't want a lot of flex. So we want hook setting power. And we want a fast reel. You always hear me all the time. I'm saying, slow down, slow down, slow down. I have whatever is the high gear tranks on that rod, Jay, the fastest tranks I own, which is the
40 inches.
I want a fast reel. So if that fish hits up and the line goes slack, I can reel into him and still have a hook setting motion that's going to be effective. Talk about some tweaks, though, for jigging. So a notorious thing about Bondi baits is a lot of people complain about their hook setting or their hooking percentage, right? Little tweak that I have is it's Tyrant Tackle at Musky Shop. We have short shank 7-0s available, right? It is a 7-0 hook that is a short shank. It's the only one I've ever seen. That is the best Bondi hook I've ever seen in my life, Jay. So okay. if you're worried about a jigging hook, check them out. It is a 7-0. So you got the width, the size of a 7-0 hook with the height of just a typical little short shank hook. So that thing's amazing on a jig. I put them on my Fuzzy Dozens. I put them on my Bondis as well. That's a little tip there. Another thing I'd say is this is overlooked again are the tubes. You know, you put a jigging rig in a 10-inch tube and that thing's got more action than just about anything else.
Yeah, don't look at tubes or don't look at Bulldogs as something that has to be advancing forward. You know, they really do work jig too.
Well, that big tail's a lot of undulation. So breaking that down about action, right? I almost knocked over my Pepsi here.
Uh-oh.
With everything, we're sort of breaking down action and undulation, right? To the best of my ability, let's think about what has the most action on the jig. So a Bondi bait is a hunk of rubber with a blade that makes some commotion, right? When jigged vertically.
Yeah, and it's a small blade, so it's small not really blade. Pulsing. Yeah.
Whereas a Magnum Bulldog's got that tail still working for you. That's going to be a bigger action. Period. Right? So if you need big action to get their attention, look at your Bulldogs, look at your Medusas. You know, your tubes are going to be how you rig them. You can put a blade on the back of those tubes easily. Very easily done there. I'm thinking out loud. Something that is not considered very often, Jay, do you know what else you can jig effectively? Spinner baits.
Okay.
Right.
Now you can't go. Say I've tried that.
Well, I have, and I've caught the scuds out of fish out of them, though. So you go, okay, well, I don't have a jig, but I've got a slop master. You have a jig. Right? So a willow leaf blade is going to fall slower than a Colorado. So a Colorado blade, if you put take a slop master bait, and you put a Colorado blade on it, you will slow the fall of that bait. You put a willow leaf blade on it, it's going to fall faster. Indiana's going to be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Right? And so if we're jigging really shallow water in the summer, maybe we're jigging a spinnerbait. We're yo-yoing. If you look at like the effectiveness of a rattle trap or a spinnerbait in a yo-yo fashion, it's undeniable. So if you need a slow falling jig, you can rip a spinnerbait a foot up and it will fall delicately slow. Rip it up delicately slow. Now, what I've done with that is effective is trying to get fish out of weed pockets that are like 10 feet. It's like 7 or 8 foot deep weeds, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
I've caught fish doing that. Primarily, remember we talked about this one time before, heavy rainfall, right? There's too much noise on the surface. We need to get down there and grind. I can lightly jig spinnerbaits. Pop them up, let them fall. Pop them up, let them fall. Right? Over deep
weeds. This is total vertical, too?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So you can throw it out and yo-yo it back in.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But I've done it in, like, weed beds where I just got right on Panoptic. Go, boop. Pop it up, let it fall. Pop it up, let it fall. You know, is it something I do every day? No, but it is effective. You know, so you can really augment a spinnerbait as a purpose-driven presentation. If you don't have a jig or you don't like a jig, you know, you put a big trailer on it, it's going to slow it down. You put a big Colorado blade, you put a 10-0 or number 10 blade on a spinnerbait, it's going to slow fall like a mother, dude.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some versatility there. Like I said, we just as musky anglers get caught up in the thought that jigs are Bondi baits. Right? Like you said, the Esox Cobra, you look at some of these different stuff, there's a lot of options there. Now we just need to suss out what they're on. Now in general, a jig's a jig's a jig. So you don't have to go out and buy a jig to be jigging. You just need to be thinking about muskies are not moving, and the pattern was this. How do we, how do we contact these fish, you know, on these breaks on the outside edge or whatever it might be when a pattern starts falling apart? But there's a lot of options that you have there to be effective. You know, back to it, like I said, the tubes. I mean, you know, if you're jigging and you're not getting hit, you can go from the 10-inch tube to the 7-inch tube. The same thing with the Bondi makes a standard Bondi. They make the little Bondi. You know, big dogs, small dogs, a lot of times you have to downsize just like any other adventure in muskie fishing, right? Mm-hmm. So we need to make augmentations there. But it's about application. So, like, if I need a super slow jigging presentation, things are bad, dude. Things are bad. Colorado on a spinnerbait. Helicopters down. Super slow, right? If I need just pound and crazy action off the bottom, you know what? I might have a pounder on and I'm going to be ripping it up a foot at a piece and jigging that. So think of jigging and think of baits that fall and think of their rate of fall. And anything's a jig if you let it hit the bottom. It really is. So if it's a sinking bait, you can jig it in some methodology, like I said, in some rather than others. I don't really have any experience or success jigging a Poseidon or jigging a swimming dog per se, but I do with spinner baits and I do with bulldogs and I do with Medusas. Boggs Tomahawks, killer, right? And as well, obviously, the Bondies and the Fuzzy Dozens. But whatever you've got on hand on these rough days, you know, you don't have to be set up for jigging to be effective in that regard. Just make bottom contact up and down, up and down, up and down, where you've got, you know, consistent action out of that bait. I don't know, Jay, what are you thinking? Maybe this makes sense. Are you going to go jig spinner baits in your local ice hole?
Yeah, I don't know about spinner baits right now for us per se, but
I heard
everything we've been talking about.
Are you guys been
about
burning top water up there right now with the snow?
We're not too far off of that. There's actually a winter storm warning tonight for my area. Should be an interesting drive to work tomorrow morning, but it's going to warm up by the end of the week. And, you know, water temps are perfect for jigging right now. Mm-hmm. And that's the scenario. I mean, you could do that all day. And it's just like, you know, there's some really intense feeding windows. We're coming into the basically the post turnover period, so fish are sliding deeper for the most part anyway. I mean, I think you're gonna see some. I talked to a guy in the shop on Friday that is super dialed in with jigging, and he was telling me about some of the success he had last year. He's mm-hmm. fired up for some cold nasty weather, and he's gonna get out there and do it. So yeah,
I mean, that's the thing. We got the Big Joes at the store. Hell, the XL Toads would work.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
There's a lot of different options there. I mean, I really just think if it's something that moves water, it's a jig, to be honest with mm-hmm. you.
Yep.
Well, Todd, I hope that helps. We're just riffing on it. Jay, next week we're going to do the full-on Q&A. But both those questions I thought were just so interesting that we had to just sort of dig in on them. You know,
yeah, perfect.
I mean, it's timely stuff. Anyway, thanks for listening to my BS, Jay.
Well, thank you as well.
I don't know. But both of those made my brain hurt. I have a smooth brain and it hurts.
It's getting late.
Smooth brain. All right, Jay Bird, say goodnight.
Night, guys. Thanks
later.
A lot.
You were laying on the carpet like you're sitting in a coffin. You said, do you believe what you're saying? Yeah, right now, but not that often. Are you dead or are you sleeping? Are you dead or are you sleeping? Are you dead or are you sleeping? Boy, I sure hope you are dead. Disappeared so often, like you dissolved into coffee. Are you here right now, or are there probably fossils under your meat? Are you dead or are you sleeping? Are you dead or are you sleeping? Are you dead or are you sleeping? Boy, I sure hope you are dead. Everybody's talking about death. You were laying on the carpet like you're sat in a coffin. You said, do you believe what you're saying? Yeah, right now, but not that often. Are you dead or are you sleeping? Are you dead or are you sleeping? Are you dead or are you sleeping? Oh, I sure